You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Ooh, chavo.
¿Quieres pedo? Nachale. Ya sabes que a mí me vale. ¿Quieres pedo? Nachale. Cause you know that I'm down for the jale. Knuckle up and boogie, let's get down. Knuckle up and boogie, get beat down. Knuckle up and boogie, let's get down. Now everybody gather round. Soy el Chavo. Do you know what that means? Got my back.
Welcome to Suplexes and Cervezas with Chavo Guerrero Jr. I'm your host, Chavo Guerrero Jr. Wow, we in for a treat today on the podcast. It's something that I definitely don't say lightly. Today's guest, nobody really knows a lot about because he really doesn't do interviews and podcasts too often. After all the people that have come and gone from the WWE, this man has remained the number one constant there. It's a guy who's known as the man and the judge of the WWE. Today, we bring to you The Undertaker. All right, man. So we're good. How's it going, man?
It's good, brother. Just, you know, living this quarantine life.
Right, right. It's shut down. What have you been doing to keep busy right now?
Nah, man. We just got back from Wyoming. Yeah, we went up there and got some fresh mountain air.
You guys are going, you're doing a lot of vacationing right now, huh?
Yeah, every day's vacation here, brother.
That's good.
That's awesome. My wife.
Yeah, right, right. You playing any golf?
You know what? I played at the beginning of the summer. We went to we went to Florida. I usually go spend a couple weeks with her parents on the East Coast there. And I had played probably in a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And so I went out with her dad and played about four rounds and I don't know, 8 days. And
oh, wow. Oh,
Yeah. My body was screaming, but every time I went out, I was feeling better. So when I got back home, I was going to start playing again. And then, I did something stupid with my back and I was 25 and not 55. I'm kind of getting over that now. So, good. Yeah, you got to hit that right hour here in Texas, man. You got to go in the morning or you got to go in the evening because that
midday is tough. Yeah.
Yeah. That noon to four hour block, brother. I don't love the game that much.
Right. And you got to play. You got to play a lot or you should just stink up a joint, you know?
Yeah. That's the big thing. You know, golf's the most humbling thing in the world because you don't practice, you don't get better. You think about it, you're like, I'm a freaking athlete, man. I can hit a ball with a stick, it messes with your mind. It's just like,
I have said that 10,000 times. I'm like, about 2 years ago, I got tired of being the shittiest golfer of my friends. I'm like, I'm much better the athlete than every one of these guys. How the heck are these guys just killing me on golf? And you just got to play. You got to, I took some lessons finally. And that was a game changer.
Yeah. It's like, you walk out there like with me, and you're like, dude, that dude's huge. He's going to hit it a mile. Right.
Right.
And then, it's just like, and it takes off like a rocket and it goes about 100 yards and then veers right.
Oh yeah. So,
I hardly ever play the fairway that I'm on, but I got a pretty good second shot from the second fairway.
I learned it's course management, instead of even teeing up with a driver all the time, I only do that in certain times. I'll bring my 3-wood out and if I'm not going to put it on the green, well then what does it matter if I'm, 10 feet from green or 120 yards out? I just, it doesn't really matter because in second shot, you got to put it on anyways.
I use that John Daly philosophy, man. Grip it, rip it.
Grip it and rip it. Yeah, yeah. You're
doing like the, most of them I know are going to be bad. They're going to be bad, I know. But they're every once in a while, I'm going to line up and hit it right.
Right, right.
Be impressive, and I just wait for those, and
Right. You know? All right. So anybody listening, you guys tell that me and Taker have a little bit of rapport. We've gone around the world a couple different times. And this is a guy that, you know, has been the phenom, has been the, you want to call it the guy that's the constant in WWE for, you know, since WWE's really been around and right before. And when did you start? 84? What year did you start?
I started with WWE in 90.
90, there you go. So yeah, 90. So from 90 to now, he's still been, you know, the guy in WWE, WWF. And he's a guy that was, could have not really taken the time to, in his position, he didn't have to sit there and be the guy who he is, but he's always helping younger guys trying to get better in their profession, in their craft, and sit there and gave a shit about the business and gave back to the business. So that's something that I definitely always learned from and always admired, you know, from you for sure.
Well, I appreciate that, man. You know, I always had the philosophy, like I'm a notorious old school guy, but, absolutely. But to the extent, like when I broke in, the way we broke in, or your legacy, right. I had nobody in the business, right?
Right.
So you can only imagine, like, how many doors I got slammed in my face, or no one paid me any attention at all. Not a lot of people know this, but when I was trying to break in, you know, I was in the Dallas area.
Yeah.
And I think every Wednesday, when they came in to, you know, they had the booking meeting.
World class?
Yeah, world class.
Right, right.
Gary Hart was booking.
Oh, at wow. The time. Great man for the business.
Yeah. Oh, he was awesome. But he'd walk right by. I guarantee you, I went down to the office every Wednesday for about 8 months straight. Just sit out in the lobby there, walk right by me, look at me, not even acknowledge my presence, and walk right by. The only one that would say anything to me was Bronco Lubitsch.
Right, yeah. Bronco, sure, yeah.
And Bronco would come in, and, you know, he'd say, "You're here again, huh, kid?" And I was like, "Yes, sir, Mr. Lubitsch." I was just hoping, you know, somebody, you know, I get a chance to talk to somebody.
And this is a 6'10" guy.
Well, 6'8" would be
6'8" at the time.
Yeah.
But a huge dude. Now, if you were sitting in the lock, you know, in the hallway, somebody would snatch him up in a minute. And go, hey, you know, what's going on? You know, Vince would get his pants wet just looking at this guy. Back then, they didn't give a shit how big you were, what they want to know. You know, you had to be one of the boys. You had to prove yourself that you wanted to be a part of this business. They weren't looking for you. You had to look for them.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I tell you how I got my break. And then I'll get back to the original point there. But
right.
One day, Fritz just happened to come in.
Yeah.
He came in.
Fritz Von Erich, the owner of World Class.
Yeah, so the father of all the Von Erich boys, right? Right. He came in, and like he stopped, he looked at me. He didn't say a word. And like I was like kind of getting up on my chair to stand up, you know, and he was staring at me. And then he made a right turn right into Bronco's office, right? Bronco Lubitsch's office.
Right.
And I could hear, you know, Fritz had that deep gravelly voice, and I could hear him say, "Bronco, who's that kid out in the lobby?" And I could hear Bronco, you know, he's been coming for months. You know, he's trying to get booked. And I heard Fritz, so let's get him booked Friday night. He looks just like David.
That's right.
And, you know, I'm like, I can overhear it, right? But I'm like, right, trying to be cool. And like, I'm about to piss my pants, right?
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, they all went into Gary Hart's office, and then they came out and they said, "Okay, be here, you know, be here on Friday night, man."
Right.
And bring a mask.
and bring a mask to cover up that face.
So, in my first match, I get Brody, right?
Oh my God, Bruiser Brody. And he was Brody at the time, like kick your ass, Brody?
Well, so they were bringing, so they had just brought Brody in, and they were getting
ready. What year is this?
This is 87.
87, okay.
So they just brought Abby in, and mm-hmm. Now they just brought Brody in.
Abdul, to work with the Butcher, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, But anyway, in starting out, you know, nobody wants to help you. You know,
back then, now it's a little bit of a different story. But back then, you had to prove yourself, and they try anything they could to get you out of the business. Absolutely. And that's why every one of those guys from those old school guys in my dad's era and even before, they were tough as nails because they had to be. Because if you weren't tough, they would kick your ass and throw you out the door.
Absolutely. You know, even at 6'8", 320 right. pounds is what I was. I remember the first that Friday night when I walked into that dressing room, and I by far was the biggest guy in the dressing room that I was in.
Right.
But brother, you want to talk about uncomfortable? Because I just walked in. It looked like I just walked into the most roughest bar on the worst side of town where there wasn't nothing but bikers. Right. And I mean, it was a bunch of men, you know?
Yeah. Men.
Men. Not boys. These were men, and they, absolutely. You know, they could care less. You know, I tried to go and you know introduce my. Right. Some of them look up, some of them wouldn't. You know, I just kind of found my place. You know, way out in the corner where nobody was. Yeah, and just sat there until they called me. And but I remember that later on. You know, I was like, man, you know, and now at that point. You know, once I started, you know, to what you started with right, and helping right. young guys, we were already starting to, you know, our talent pool was starting to shrink.
Right.
So, you know, I could have, yeah, I could have big wigged if I wanted to, but, you know, I think for the sake of the business, like I needed to, you know, we all needed people, new people to work with and people to step up. And,
yeah,
you know, I was just like, and I just remember being in that position, like, and how uncomfortable it was. Now I was tough on guys.
Right.
You know, but as long as you know, like I was showing up before the matches and stuff, and right. I'll work out with you, but don't tell me you're going to be there and then not be there.
Absolutely.
And then don't try.
You get one chance. You get one chance.
You get one chance. Like, yeah. Cause you're yeah. right. I don't have to be there. I can be, you know, sleeping off my hangover in the hotel, but you
right.
know,
right. Yeah. Right.
But as long as people, you know, as long as the guys came and put the effort, I would help. And, you know, and also there's the, you know, you may not agree with what I say, but try to apply it once. And right. don't let me go on and go on and go on and explain my philosophy and, right. and my, you know, the way I do things and just right. completely blow it off. It may not work for you. That's the, you know, that was the crazy thing about our business.
Right.
You know, what worked for you may not work for me.
Right. And that's why I tell people a lot of times, if I do a seminar, I tell them, look, I'm going to give you what works for me. It doesn't mean that it's right. Doesn't mean that it's wrong. You know, a Taker, a Steamboat, an Arn Anderson will give you what works for them. You eventually take a little bit from everybody and you make your own style.
Yeah. That's what's so difficult. Yeah. I always tell people, like, you can, you know, the learning to wrestle part, the moves and all, right. that's the easiest part of it.
That's easy.
If you're somewhat athletic, that's the easiest part.
Absolutely.
But putting something genuine,
right,
that people can believe in, you know, that's the hard part. And learning, you know,
yeah.
I could sit there and talk to you an hour. Okay, this is my philosophy. This is the way I do things. And then there's somebody, you know, like a Cena that comes along. Like, okay, everything I just said, he doesn't do.
Right.
He's a mega superstar. Right. You know what I mean? It's just right. crazy, but you're right. That you said that you have to take all this stuff in.
Right.
And then figure out how it works for you. And that's the tough part about the industry. That's what separates people from, you know.
That's what separates you not. Make it or you don't make it. And that's yeah. that they can shove somebody down your throat. And if you just don't connect with the fans and you just, it's not the moves. We've seen it moves. It's not the moves. It's a no. story. If you can't tell that story and you can't connect with the fans, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And I think that's that part, it's getting a little better, but that's what's lost, I think, in the product today.
Sure.
Because everybody's, relies on, okay, well, I can do a double backflip off the top rope onto the floor or, yeah, right. and that's what they rely on, but they don't realize that people get desensitized. Yes,
desensitized, I guess. Yeah, that sounds good.
they get used to seeing it, and then right. okay, now what are you going to do for me? I've seen that move.
Yeah, totally.
So if you know that process.
You know how many times I've heard, he's the next Rey Mysterio. He's the next Eddie Guerrero. And that was my dog going crazy for a siren. Hey, you know, there's one Rey Mysterio. There's one Eddie Guerrero. There's one Benoit. There's one Undertaker. There's just one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey. He's going crazy.
That dog, man.
I know. Hey, you're obviously an athlete as a kid, but were you a wrestling fan?
Oh, huge, man. Yeah, really? I was a big wrestling fan. So I grew up in Houston with Paul Bosch.
Paul Bosch,
Yeah, Paul Bosch, Houston Wrestling, man. I was a fan from
Gino.
As long as Gino and Al Madrill, all those guys. Yeah. Jose Lothario.
Yeah.
Who else? Blackie Gordman.
Black Gordman, Goliath. Yeah, those guys. Ooh, great wrestlers, great heels. Ooh, those are the best.
Oh, they were awesome heels, right? Yeah, they looked like heels. They acted like heels.
They were heels outside of the ring, man. They really were. Like, you had to prove yourself to them, to get in the ring with them. My dad remembers, like, Gorman and Goliath had wrestled for my grandfather. So, you know, they'd been over at my dad's house and with my grandmother and grandfather and eating dinner and stuff. And then my dad had to wrestle them, and they would just beat the crap out of them. They're like, wait a minute, you've eaten my house, and all of a sudden you're just beating me up and not giving them a thing, and just eat them up. And that's how it was.
Yeah. Business is business, right? Back then, that's just, yeah. But yeah, so I may have been 12 years old, right?
Yeah.
My mom, we didn't have a lot of money, but my mom and dad had saved up enough money to get me and my friend across the street and my mom, we had three tickets.
Right.
And these tickets were going to be right on the aisleway, right? And they had just brought in the original Sheik.
Oh, yeah.
To work. I don't know who he's going to work with. But, man, the whole week, you know, when we're talking all this mad shit about what we're going to do. Like, yeah, man, we're going to get in his face and we're going to, you know. So it's finally time for him to come out, right? And man, we're hanging on the barricade, you know, and he's still about 15, 20 feet ahead of us, and we're screaming and we're hollering at him, you know. And back then, brother, the Sheik was everybody was like, whoa. Yeah. Anyway, so we're yelling at him, right? And all of a sudden, man, he just made a little quick move towards us. Shit, we stampeded that whole aisle trying to get back. It was nothing but asses and elbows trying to get out of the way. And then me and my buddy are fighting, like, I thought you were going to do it. He said, I thought you were going to do something. And I was like, oh, you're chicken, man. He goes, no, you were. And, but that was the good old days, man, back then.
Who trained you?
So that's a funny question. I paid my money to Buzz Poirier.
Okay. Let's get into this. You paid your money.
So I paid my money to Buzz Sawyer to train me. I was actually, it was between my junior and senior year of college.
Right.
And my coach had told me that, you know, I was getting a lot of inquiries from overseas, you know, European leagues about a tryout. You know, I didn't have that NBA game at all. I won't even begin to lie like I did.
Right.
But, you know.
Talk to Tatanka on that, because I know you've dunked on his ass a couple times.
Oh, yeah. Big time. I still had hops back when we used to play. So they had, you know, kind of relayed to my coach that they wanted me to get a little bigger. You know, because of the style they played over there, really physical style. So I'm training at this gym in Fort Worth, and there's a guy who's a couple years younger than I was, and he worked there. He was a trainer, and he was like, man, he goes, I'm going to go to the wrestling school, and, you know, I'm going to learn how to wrestle. You got to do that with me, you know? And I was like, no, I think I'm going to go try and play some pro ball overseas. And it's like every day I'd come in, you know, and he would hit me up. And, you know, the one thing, you know, that I'm grateful for, that I usually have a true sense of what my abilities are and what my abilities aren't.
Right.
You know,
I don't try to fool myself.
And
you're a realist.
I'm a realist. Exactly.
Okay.
So I thought about it, you know, and I said, you know, and I'm starting to kind of now, you know, he's talking to me, and so I'm trying. Now I'm kind of at this point, I haven't seen wrestling in a few years now, right?
Right.
I kind of got away from it. So I'm kind of watching the product, you know, and Bill Watts is, you know, Mid-South is going nuts. You know, the Von Erichs are doing, you know, big business in Texas. Right. Of course, right. You got the cable with Vince and Turner and everything's right. going on. So I'm catching up to everything. And I'm thinking, man, you know, I kind of started getting, you know, getting that, oh, that's cool. Oh, man, that's pretty cool, you know.
Right.
You know, about the wrestling. And then I was like, man. I was like, even if I make a team, how long do I really have? You know, do I have 2 or 3 years? And at 20 years old or 19 years old, 20 years old, like going to Lithuania, it's really not that appealing. Right.
And making peanuts. You're not going to.
Yeah. Peanuts. And making peanuts. And, right. you know, I passed on a scholarship to go to Hawaii. That had to have been fate.
Yeah.
But, because that was. Thinking about it now, I was like, wow, I wish I would have been to Hawaii.
Wow.
But
hooked up with like Brian Adams over there if you met him.
Yeah, there. Right? Oh, no God. Doubt.
You guys are on the island.
Good thing we didn't hook up any earlier than we did.
Yeah, exactly.
Enough trouble as it was. Lynn Denton.
Yeah, Lenny.
Lynn Denton was booked in Dallas at that time, and he was working out there. So we kind of started picking his brain and he said, well, I think Buzz Sawyer's running, you know, is going to do some training. Right. So we end up having this meeting with Buzz Sawyer at some restaurant and he said, all right, this is the deal. I'll train you to wrestle. It's $2,500 at $2,500 is, you know, a fortune, especially, you know, as a, you know, a kid on scholarship and, you know, right, in school right. with no grants or anything else, just, I'm thinking, wow, okay. $2,500, he goes. And I tell you what, he goes, I'll take off $500 for every guy that you bring in. You know?
Wow.
So I'm thinking, okay. So I end up finding somebody else too. So I end up paying Buzz Sawyer $2,000 cash, right? So it comes to the day that we're going to start training. He says, be at my house at 9 a.m. Now, he lived way on the other side of Irving, or, you know, it was a good haul to get there by 9 a.m.
Right.
Go to his front door. Knock, 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 knock. Nothing. Knock, 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 knock. Nothing. Finally, man, I got to 10 minutes, you know, the door swings open. There stands Buzz, butt ass naked, just standing there. Like, what the fuck y'all want? What are you doing? Like, we're here to train. Oh, that's today? Okay, hang on. He slams the door, right? There's like 10 of us out there, you know, we don't know each other. You know, everybody's kind of looking at each other like, what the hell? And then, I don't know, did you ever meet Perry Jackson, Action Jackson?
I know the name. I don't think I ever met him.
So anyway, 10 minutes later, he comes out, right? You can tell he just woke up. And so for the next 2 hours, ran us around the neighborhood and all the, all the stuff, the runoff stuff, right? The stuff to try to get you to quit. Like, you know,
wheelbarrows and all those. Yeah, yeah.
Hug bendovers and all that, right?
Right, right.
So we do that for about 2 hours. You got guys puking, you know.
Right.
Finally, Buzz comes out, right? And he's got his flip-flops and his – way too short of gym shorts on.
Right.
And he lines everybody up. He says, all right, get down. So everybody gets down, right? One at a time, amateur position. He gets on, just stretches everybody, right? Everybody's just twisted up, you know?
Right.
So that goes on. That goes on for about 3 weeks, right? And at the end of 3 weeks, are we ever going to get a ring? He says, well, I'm waiting on one part. I got everything but one part.
And back then, guys, for you guys are listening, you paid up front. They wanted to get you out of it. They would run you ragged so that you wouldn't come anymore. They got your money. You're done. And whoever's left, like, well, I guess I got to train these last two.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the whole thing, was just trying to run us off.
Right.
There was no there never was a ring. But anyway, I showed up. I think it was like the sixth week, and it already dwindled down to like there was only three of us left.
Right.
And everybody else had just said, screw it. I'm out. I can't take it.
Right.
And so about sixth or seventh week, I go knock on the door. Nothing. I was like, oh, man, here we go again. Knock on the door. Nothing. So, I mean, this went on like for 15, 20 minutes. Finally, I like went and peeked into a window, right? House is completely empty.
Oh, my God.
He then moved on to a different territory.
Really?
So, yeah. So, evidently, he must have did it pretty quick. Like, I guess he had a starting date somewhere else.
Right.
But he had two beautiful Rottweilers.
Yeah.
Right? And he couldn't take them, or I guess he planned on coming back and getting them.
Right.
So I took those. So I'm getting something out of this, right?
You took his dogs.
I took his dogs, right? And, but, yeah, so that's how it all started. That was my first interaction, really, in the business.
Wow. Did you ever meet up with Buzz again after that? Did you ever see him again?
I did. And, it was in WCW when I got to WCW.
Right.
I just had me sitting in a dressing room, you know, big, the dressing, you know, the big R back there. And
yeah. Yeah.
I'm just sitting across the room, you know, and I'm contemplating in my head. Now, see, I'm a greenhorn still. Right.
Right. Right.
I just got called up from Tennessee because Sid and her got hurt.
Right.
And I'm sitting there and I'm staring at him across the room. You know, he knows that I'm making eye contact with him. And
yeah.
He's like, finally, he just couldn't take it anymore, you know? And he's like, do I know you? What do you want? What's your deal?
Right.
Like, you don't remember me, do you? I was like, no, why should I? Why the fuck should I?
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, well, because you took $2,000 of my money.
Right.
And, you know, then he got a little, a little uneasy about it. And then it was like, he thought about it. He said, well, what do you want to do? You want to fight? I'm good, man. I'm good. I was like, your dog's got a real good home too. He got hot, right?
Right.
He's like, my fucking dogs. All right. I was like, they got good homes, man.
Right.
And,
right.
So that was that.
I cut their balls off too. They can't breed anymore.
And I don't know. Did you ever stay at that Ramada in Atlanta?
Yeah. The Dungeon. Absolutely. The Dungeon. That's when I first broke in WCW. That's what, I stayed there for one straight week with my girlfriend at the time, which is my wife now. But literally we were looking for, I'd stayed there a whole bunch of times before that, but we lived there for like 10 days looking for an apartment.
Right. So you remember the Waffle House, right?
Right next door. Yeah. You know, Delaine is still there, by the way.
Is she really?
She's still there. Penzer. I just saw David Penzer the other day at the Talking Shop of Mania for Gallows and Anderson. And he was there and he said that they remodeled the whole thing, but she's still there.
Wow. That's incredible. Man. Right, that's right? Over 30 years.
Now, this was a place that all the boys stayed at in WCW all the time. We called it the Dungeon because it was a rundown kind of old Ramada right next to Waffle House, and had this the bar area that we'd all just go partying all the time. Yeah, at any time you saw all of these WCW superstars partying in this little dive bar. It was great.
It was a lot of good times in there. Right. Back to Buzz, like I remember I was up on, I don't know, like the sixth or seventh floor,
right,
and I'm looking out my window and I can see the Waffle House, and I can see Buzz in there, right?
Right, right.
It's like 3 a.m. And he's in a booth and he's kind of, you know, he's doing the, and boy, I had some thoughts, man. I'm like,
oh man, that would have been a good one. That would have been a good like, back.
Man, I can catch him, right? I can catch him coming across that little knoll right there. I was like, I had to really talk myself out of doing it. You know, it's a good thing. Like I hadn't been drinking or anything else because I was still clear headed, but so I let it go. And I mean, he ended up, you know, passing away a few years later. I think he OD'd or something. I don't remember, but that was how I jumped into the business with that, you know, knife out right away.
I'm going to pull a couple of pictures up here and see who these guys are. So who's,
Get out of there.
Hold on.
Give me a little heads up.
Shit, hold on. Let me stop this. Hold on. I got some other ones. Hold on. Let's see where we're at. Okay, this is the one I want, I think. Let's go. Okay, who's that?
That's right there.
Look at that's you're right. A jacked up guy there, man.
Yeah, that's the Master of Pain there. That was my second stint working for Jarrett and Lawler right there. So that's probably 88, I guess, 1988.
Right. Nah, you were
everything genius. I went and had that thing on my wrist made, the collar made.
Yeah.
I couldn't even grow a full mustache then, man. Look at that. Yeah.
Okay, so let's go to another one. Boom. How about this one?
I'm kind of scared now, man.
Yeah. Okay. Let me stop this. Your next one.
Holy hell. No. I look like Chavo. Oh, that's you. All right.
Let's see this one come up. Boom.
Oh, all right. So that is, that's Mean Mark Callis right there, man.
Yeah. Mean Mark. And then look at Spivey, right? Young Spivey. And Teddy Long down there, huh? Got that one?
Yeah, that was my first trip to Japan. That's probably
you and Big Scott.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
Big Scott Hall there, the young. He was Big Scott Hall back then, right?
Man, he was Jack, dude.
I know he was.
He was big. He could go too, man. He was a hell of a worker. I'm not going to drink anything else till you get all these pictures out of here. I about spit everything up on that one right there.
Same one. Hold on, let me get rid of it.
Oh, okay. So that's the Master of Pain right there with Ronnie P. Gossett.
Oh yeah. Okay. Sure.
So that's the world title there in Memphis. You know, that Lawler always had.
Right.
Good. So my gimmick here, I was the Master of Pain. I was brought out of the Atlanta State or the Atlanta Federal Penitentiary. Dutch Mantell and Ricky Morton got me out of prison somehow, they brought me into Memphis to take care of Lawler. Yeah, they never would let me have the belt though. They only gave me the belt at TV or at the house show, and then they took it back from me.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Well, I didn't get to carry the belt around with me at all.
they're smart. They weren't.
Yeah, they were very smart. Yeah.
Cool. Just different pictures, man. I love those coming up and. Because your career, now how'd you get the call up to New York?
So,
where were you before when you got the call? Where were you?
I was in WCW.
Okay.
At the time, right?
As Mean Mark.
As Mean Mark Callis.
Right. I remember that.
So they gave me the standard deal, the basic bottom line deal, right?
Right.
And
I had that one too. So.
Yeah. So they give me that. And I don't know what I was thinking, but it worked out to my advantage. But like, I didn't have an attorney, I didn't have a lawyer, but I said, can I take the contract and show it to my lawyer? And they said, oh yeah, absolutely. Well, I never give it back.
Oh,
right.
Okay. Yeah.
So I worked for a little over eight months there, got paid every week like I should have, but I never signed the contract.
Right, because they would totally lose track of who signed and who they were just so unorganized, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
So, it was getting close. So about 8 months, I started talking to Ole a little bit, like, hey, you know, I'd like to kind of, you know, redo my deal. Like, I didn't want to go anywhere. I was where I wanted to be.
Right.
And, so I go to the tower of CNN tower, wherever the hell the offices were. Jim Herd is there. Ole Anderson and Jim Barnett.
Okay.
And so I go in and I say, well, you know, I'd like a little bump. And I was just looking for a little bit of a bump up, you know?
Right.
This is what I get. Ole looks me straight in the eyes. Like, son, you're a great athlete. But no one will ever pay money to see you wrestle.
No one. No money. No one will ever pay to see you ever.
No one will ever pay money to see you wrestle. So I kind of realized at that point where my ceiling was, and they didn't want to give me any more money. right?
Right.
So on this you're going to be
in your spot for the rest of your career, making other guys look great.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I've got 3 months left on this unsigned deal. Like right. They think they've got me right. So I think by this time, Paul Heyman is my manager.
Oh, nice.
So Paul is talking to Bruce Pritchard.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Bruce is relaying information to Vince. And, So I got to a point where I got a meeting, right?
Right.
So the meeting happened while I was out on the road, and they called me and said, hey, can you come in at the end of this deal?
They would you up at the time, right? Fly you up to Stanford to go meet with Vince at his house or wherever, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, this is in the era of the Zubaz, right? That's what
Zubaz, nice high techs and fanny packs.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't have any clothes. So I had to, go buy some clothes and then come to find out. So the meeting gets canceled because that's when, you remember the parasailing accident, Brutus the Barber?
Right. Broke his face.
Yeah. So my meeting got canceled.
Right.
I'm like, oh, crap. Right. So, but it finally gets rescheduled. I go up there and, have my meeting with Vince, and I think I'm killing it, right? Like I'm being charming and I got personality and, it's right. In his house too. I didn't go to the towers. I went to his house. Thinking,
right.
What? They brought me to the house. This is a good sign. Get to the end of the meeting. Well, we really don't have anything for you right now.
Oh my God.
I forgot to mention the point. I'd already given my notice.
Oh.
I'd already given my notice to WCW.
Yes, I'm going to WWF, and I quit here. I'm out of here. And
that's exactly
what.
Yeah, we don't really have anything for you right now. I'm like, okay.
Shit, yeah.
Maybe after Mania, things will open up. We move guys around after Mania usually, and I'm thinking, okay, all right, okay. I was like, holy crap, did I just overplay my hand?
Right.
But ended up going out and reading for a part in a movie, probably the worst movie in the world ever made, Suburban Commando. So. That was pre-Undertaker.
Right, right.
So I came in right out of that. Then I came in and, started in 90, yeah. So
did you have some dealings with Hogan at that time, because he was in the movie? I don't think you had any lines in the movie, did you?
Yeah, I had one line, right?
And I know you were just a big, huge zombie guy or something, like a robot or something.
We were alien bounty hunters.
There you go. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And no lines in there except for one line.
Right.
And then they dubbed over my voice with like a really high squeaky girl's voice. Because the line was, and as they're directing it, you got to be forceful, like,
right.
You're a dead man, Ramsey.
Yeah.
And when it comes out, it's like, you're a dead man, Ramsey. And his line back is, I see why you guys never talk.
Right. So did he remember you, like, when you came up then?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. He remembered me.
Okay, Right. And now you are, so now you have no... You put your notice in, you had a meeting and nothing for you. Then what happens?
So now I'm like, oh crap. So Lawler was doing some kind of big tournament, where he was bringing a bunch of different guys in.
Right.
So I did that. And then shortly thereafter, I got the call to go out and read for this movie. And it was unfortunate because I ended up getting the part.
Right.
And I got the part, and maybe 2 days after I get the part, of all people who call me, like, Greener, I'm greener than shit, right, at this point.
Right, right.
Harley Race calls me.
Oh, God.
And wants me to be his tag team partner in the Japan tournament. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
So this is what year?
This is 88.
80, 89, something like that, right?
Yeah, 88.
So 89. Harley was still the man.
Yeah, Harley was still the man. Especially
Harley was the man at all times, never stopped being the man, but he was the man, the man.
Yeah, yeah.
We always say with Harley Race, he was the man in wrestling when men were men.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Nobody messed with Harley Race. And
nobody.
He had that gravelly voice that talked like this, and he never talked louder or more forceful. He just...
Yeah, that's pretty good. You got a pretty good Harley there. it was like ripping my heart out, you know, telling him that I had, because I'd already committed to doing the movie, right?
Right.
Man, I was just like, oh, God, how can I get out of this? Because to go to the Japan tournament with Harley Race.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, that would have changed
your career, too. You would have started going to Japan. Because once they saw you work, they would have been, okay, we want this guy. You would have been a Japanese guy in Japan for a long time, which is awesome, was great. And they played incredible money back then.
But yeah.
That would have definitely changed your career.
It probably would have. Yeah, that's the one thing on the resume I wish I could have said, that I was tag team partners with Harley Race in the Japan tournament. But
right.
Wasn't meant to be.
So Vince finally calls you?
Yeah, so this is where your family comes involved.
Right, right.
So they start the big giant egg promotion, right?
What's in the egg? It's Thanksgiving. What's in the egg? Summer, you know, was it SummerSlam or Survivor Series?
Yeah. What's in the egg, right? Now, see, right. Now let me backtrack a little bit. I always wanted to be like the wrestler's wrestler, like WCW, right? They didn't have the outlandish characters.
Right.
At the time, Vince was doing everything crazy. I was like, I'm more of a serious guy, so I want to be in WCW. Right. Obviously, they've told me what my ceiling is.
Right.
You know, now, you know, I've got to go look and see what else on the other side. So now there's this giant egg they're promoting, and it's, when is this egg going to hatch? And, you know, I'm also hearing Bruce like, hey, it might be pretty soon, you know, but he's not giving me anything.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, and at the time, now I'm trying to grow my hair out. Right.
Right.
So I'm thinking, oh my gosh, man, they're going to put me in that egg. They're going to make me shave my head. They're going to make me shave my eyebrows. I'm going to be Eggman. I got to a point where I got serious anxiety about it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, so finally one day the phone rings, and got up, because we didn't have cell phones back then, right? So I had to go get up and get the hard line, right? And it's kind of a hello. And is this the Undertaker? I'm like, Undertaker. Undertaker is not an Eggman. Undertaker. It ain't Eggman. Yeah, this is the Undertaker. Oh, all right. Good to hear. You know.
Well, all right. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you be on a plane up here tomorrow? I don't have enough money to buy a ticket, right? Because that's how green I am. I don't even realize that they're gonna.
Yeah.
They're gonna call and get me a ticket and do all that for me.
Right.
And I was like, yes, sir. Yeah, I can get up there tomorrow. All right. Good deal. Well, you know. So I hang up the phone and I'm just like. You know, I'm not the Eggman. And so went up to Connecticut the next day. And, you know,
Eggman ended up being the gobbledygooker, my uncle Hector Guerrero.
Was Hector.
Yeah, the Hector. And his deal was that they put him in a turkey outfit. And he had like egg-shaped eyes that they put little holes in there so he could see. But then when he kind of tried to come out to the ring, the spotlight was coming in to his face. And all the little holes were just like spot. He couldn't see because all the spotlight was going into those little holes on his egg eyes. He was falling all over the place. He had big old feet on him, and he looked like a big a Mickey Mouse character from Disneyland.
Oh my gosh! I was just glad it wasn't me, man. I
remember your debut, and I didn't see the Survivor Series, but I saw the replay of it.
Right.
And I remember, but you came in, you arrived.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, I got a few different territories under my belt.
Right.
You know, I had been to Japan. I'd been to South Africa. I'd worked in WCW. I'd worked in Texas, Tennessee. So I had, you know, I had a little bit of, you know, I've tasted a little bit of all of it. And
well, usually you didn't make it to WWF at the time until you were 10 or 15 years into your career. You were at the pinnacle of your career. You were like firing on all cylinders. That's when you went to New York, we call it.
Yeah.
But now it's kind of, it's switched. So you almost start your career there and then go other places. So when you were other, you, like you said, you had already traveled, you've been a heel, you've been a baby face, you've been a tag team partner, you've been singles. So when you went up there, you were polished, you were ready to rock.
Yeah. I'm still like, I had to, the biggest thing was figuring out the gimmick.
Sure.
Like I knew how to work and I knew how to take care of myself at that point. Like I knew when somebody was trying to take advantage or, so I had all that part, but now it's working a gimmick.
Right.
Super gimmick. And that's what, you know, for the next couple of years, that was the biggest part is piecing all that together so that it was, because it was an over-the-top gimmick.
Right.
And it was my, you know, my vision was always make that character believe, people believe in that character.
Believe, yeah.
That was the thing with the gimmick. I mean, just trying to get it polished.
I mean, I remember Eddie telling me the first time he had worked you. And then what I actually, the first time that I actually worked you and seen you, your entrance come out. One of the most, to me, the best entrance of all time in wrestling. When I hear that doom and the torches and stuff. And then you walk out and you walk right there and you stare at that person. Then you make that turn to the left and you come right up. It's iconic. You're in the ring. You get chills. I mean, I still get chills looking at it because it was so good. And then you get in the ring and you're like butter. You're like just so smooth and so awesome. To everybody listening, this is something that I've heard a lot of these stories before because we're usually at the bar with a bottle of Jack in front of us doing this, talking about these stories, you know? So there's a lot of stories that we don't know about you. And if you don't mind, I got a couple of fun questions in here.
All right, man, let's hear it.
All right. So what was your first car?
My first car that was a 87 blue Monte Carlo.
I love it. 87. Yeah. Well, that's pretty, what year was that? It's got to be.
Well, that was an 87. Yeah. So the car, I think, might've been like maybe an 80.
Yeah. Right. 77, right?
Yeah. It was, it had some miles on it, man.
Right. That's awesome.
I ended up having to hock it to keep my career going. Yeah.
We've all done that.
Yeah.
Now, is that the first car that you had sex in?
No.
Okay, we'll leave that.
It was her car.
Was it her car. A VW Bug. No. What was your first fight as a kid?
I'm not bragging. My first fight was in kindergarten, man.
Kindergarten, wow.
Yeah, it terrified me. This kid jumps on my back, right?
Yeah.
In kindergarten, and I kind of sling him off, and I come up, and I drill him right in the nose, and his nose just went.
Oh, God. Scared the shit out of you.
I thought I'd killed him. Because, I mean, it was a bloodbath. What are you, 5, 6 years old in kindergarten? Five?
Right.
And this kid's nose is just gushing, right? And the teacher, you know, rushing him out to the nurse's office. Oh my gosh. There's been several more.
Sure. Back then, if you weren't a fighter, you didn't make it in wrestling. You just didn't.
Somebody was going to test you somewhere.
Oh, they're going to beat you up. And then you would just, then if you couldn't handle yourself, then everybody would have just beat you up. That's just the way it was.
Yep.
Today's a little bit different, you know, probably a good thing, you know, because now we got a lot of guys that are great performers, not necessarily super tough guys, but great performers and able to draw money. And it's changed.
But the business has changed. Yes.
But back in the day, if you could not handle yourself, you did not make it in wrestling, period.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Favorite food.
Favorite foods. Got to be steak. Easy. Steak. Yeah.
Steak guy. Okay, cool. Yeah. What's your favorite type of music or favorite band?
I'm pretty eclectic. I listen to a lot of country now, but, like old school rock and roll, you know, Metallica and all that, you know, that stuff. AC/DC. And I also love blues, man. Like Stevie Ray Vaughan, and I could sit and listen to him play. I could put everything I own of Stevie Ray Vaughan and just listen to it. I just
Austin got, boy, right?
Yeah, he was an Austin guy.
He's so good. He's so good. He's one of my favorites of all time still. Just watching, I've seen like videos of him and just go and just man, just it's incredible.
There's stories here where, you know, when he was practicing and playing that, like he would get blisters on his fingertips, right? And then that he would super glue the skin to his fingers so he could keep playing. I mean, just crazy stuff like that. But he was, man, if you haven't heard Stevie Ray Vaughan play guitar, you really missed out.
For sure, for sure. Favorite movie?
Black Hawk Down.
Oh, great. Great movie. Love it.
Yeah.
What's your favorite country to wrestle in or visit or whatever, you know, your favorite country?
Outside of the U.S., obviously, I love Australia. I love going to Australia and wrestling. Right. It's one of the people there are so nice. They're like Texans, actually. They really are. Really,
it's a little outlaw out there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're no bullshit kind of people. They tell you what they think. The country's beautiful. So I love going to Australia. I don't like the traveling over there, but I love once you get there, Australia is just beautiful, man.
Right, right. That's no wonder I always get in fights every time I go there. It's because you're right. They are kind of like Texan, you know.
Yeah,
Texas, they don't take any shit. Any, I'm sure you have many of them, but a crazy fan moment.
Wow. I've had several. One that really stands out. So when Paul Bearer turned on me, right, when he cracked me with the urn and went with Mankind. So there was this girl somewhere up in the Midwest, and I think this was going to be the first TV or so after he turned on me. Mm-hmm. And that day, so I get to, I think, I want to say it was somewhere up in Iowa, somewhere way up there in the Midwest. But so I got to the building, and it wasn't unusual back in the day for me to have flowers, like black roses or rose. Right. You know, I used to see a lot of flowers.
Well, you had in the ring too. Did they bring like wreaths, dead wreaths out in the ring?
That oh, yeah.
Death wreaths. Yeah.
Yeah, all kind of weird stuff like that. Right, and right. So with this flowers, there was a box wrapped up, right? So I opened up the box, and it was a vial of what should have been at one time was perfume, right. Not the spray kind, but the kind that you actually dab on you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like perfume. Yeah. Yeah. Perfume. Yeah.
Yeah. So the perfume was gone and it was filled with blood.
Oh my God.
It was this girl's blood.
Wow.
Right. And she wrote this long letter, how she was so sorry that Paul Bearer had did this to me and that she would follow me to the end of time and all of it. I'm like, whoa, this is a whack job, right? So we go out that, you know, to the ring. It was it was a TV actually. So anyway, I'm in the ring doing whatever. Paul Bearer comes down and this girl's in the crowd.
Really?
She jumps the barricade, right? And double legs Paul Bearer.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And Paul Bearer, you know, he was a little top heavy. And so she got him double leg.
A little bit.
So she's got him double leg and he's trying to keep his balance and he's got the urn in one hand and he's trying to get her off. he topples over. And this girl's already in security filing. So. Oh my
She God. Just hoping he didn't fall on her. Oh, she probably wasn't doing it. So would you guys, how was the wedding when you guys got married?
Oh, yeah. Well, can we go get her now? No. This was, so later that night.
Yeah.
We're at the hotel, right?
Right.
And, there wasn't anything going on out. So we were kind of in our rooms, you know,
right.
Doing whatever for some reason. I don't know. There had been like, I don't know, six or seven of the boys. I don't know if we were playing cards or what, but like six or seven of the boys are in my room and there's a knock on the door. And,
No.
So Hawk goes and opens the door, right?
Right, with that voice. Like, yeah. Who's there?
Hey, dead man, you expecting somebody? So he opens the door and like he's got his hand like so. And I'm like, negative, Hawk. Go ahead and close that door for me, bud. Close the door right now. I'm telling everybody, you know, a lot of people have already seen it, right? I'm
right,
like,
right.
Oh, that's the girl that attacked Paul Bear, right? So I call down to the desk. And I was like, hey, there's a crazy girl up here. You need to come and get her, right? So anyway, so they come and get her, make her leave. And she comes back a second time. And then finally they get her, they send her off. And somebody was over in my room that was staying at a different hotel that I ended up, because I, you know, I had to always make sure everybody got where they had to be at the end right. of the night. I won't say it was Brian Lee, maybe. I'm not sure who it was. But so I'm taking him back to his hotel. He says, hey, you mind stopping in this convenience store? I need to get some chew, right? So I go to pull into the parking lot, and sitting on the sidewalk at the thing is this girl, right? And I was like, whoa, no. Ooh, so yeah. We're going to have to find a different store. You're going to have to do it out, man. Yeah, it was crazy.
And back in the day, you know, Taker always was in gimmick. And that's how it was. You just always were in gimmick. And you always had the sunglasses on and the dark, long, dark hair and always in black, right?
Yeah.
So as soon as you walked in, everybody knew who it was. It wasn't like all of a sudden it was, you know, your real name. It was just some guy that was the Undertaker at all times.
All times.
Yeah, that's freaking awesome. Now in WWF, there was a couple different factions in WWF, and you had, you know, the Clique at the time, you know, who was the Hall and Nash, or they were Diesel and Razor Ramon, and Shawn Michaels and Triple H.
Right.
And then, you know, and they're notorious for having messed with a bunch of the wrestlers and kind of, you know, it was a different time. It was Wild West, and those guys were protecting themselves. And if you weren't part of them, you were against them. But you had your Clique too. And those guys never messed with you guys, huh?
No.
His Clique. Now you got guys like, you know, you, who was like, not your Clique, but you know, who'd you run with back then?
So back then, so you got, all right, you got Yokozuna. You got the Godfather, or Shango, or Kama, whichever one you want to call.
Right.
You got Rikishi.
Rikishi.
Samu.
Oh, man.
Bryan Adams. Henry Godwin. Phineas Godwin.
Right.
Fabio Vega. Yeah, and myself.
They couldn't mess with you guys.
No. I don't think they would, they never tried, they never did anything, but.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, I think we saved their butts a couple of times out, but.
And the only reason I even bring it up is I always love that is because you have these guys that were like the Clique, and they were guys that just, you know, that was their run, their gang, the people they hung out with. And you had your people who you hung out with, and you guys were like the boys, man. When I see part of your guys, I was like, wow, that was pretty awesome. And now knowing all of those guys, they're pretty awesome too. It's just a different time. You know what I mean?
Different times, absolutely.
Yeah. I love those guys. You got burned, right, brother? You were actually going out to the ring and were like, had some severe burns going on.
Yeah, I think it was, what year was that? 2007, maybe. Mm-hmm. It was the Elimination Chamber. So I think, I don't even remember who all was in the match. I know Jericho was in there. Anyway, I was the last guy in one of the pods, and I was the last guy out.
Right.
But on my entrance, so I come out onto the stage, and one of the butane fireballs came up on my left side. And, you know, it had been close before, close enough that I had said, like, this is really hot, but I'm not going to bust character. I'm just going to kind of,
right.
You know, because I had the leather coat on. And But this time it comes up and it was too close to me. So I had to turn, and when I turned away from it, the one on the other side blew. So I'm caught, I'm totally engulfed in this butane fireball. And the only thing that I knew what to do was to go straight to get out of it, right? So needless to say, my pace to the ring was a lot faster than what it normally was, right?
Right.
So as I come out and I can start to see the arena again, like my right arm is on fire.
Oh God.
And I can see fire on my hat. Wow. So anyway, so I'm shucking all that stuff as I come, you know, as I come out of that fireball and I get rid of it, and then boom, I climb up and I get in the pod, and you know, I'm looking down. So my singlet, mm-hmm. where it was open, I'm looking down at that skin, and it's just bubbling up.
Wow.
Right. So the way that the chamber was built, you know, they could get crew guys underneath it and look up through the floor, you know, and I was like, just give me water, give me, you know, because they want to know what I wanted to do. Right. And I was like, no, you know.
Anybody else would have been like, dude, I just got third degree burns. I need to go to the back, and you have to wrestle a match.
Yeah. So I had to wait in the chamber. I had to wait for 20 plus minutes.
In gimmick. Not on fire. Third degree burn. Yeah.
And then once I got out, I had to go for another 20 minutes. So,
Gosh, so
I'm taking bottles of water and just kind of pouring on them, and I'm watching the skin kind of pop up and peel off. And, yeah, it was pretty hairy, and it was fate again taking care of me, because originally, so I went into that match, I was champion.
Right.
So originally I was going to wear one of the sleeveless ones mm-hmm. that kind of all gather up, and which mm-hmm. would have exposed my arms.
Right.
And would have really have been a mess. But I was like, no, this is my last night as champion. I want people to see me. I want to be able to see the belt, you know, because I didn't want to carry it like everybody does now. I wanted to give it the proper respect, right? You know, at the last minute, I switched coats to the long sleeve coat and then put the hat on. And the second thing I did, I was like, okay, I'm going to be in that pod for at least 20 minutes. So I took another bottle of water before I went out and poured on myself. So my hair was just soaking wet. I was dripping wet. So that helped me, but still to this day, like if I get out and get in the sun, you can see the crescent skin turns colors, but yeah, it was pretty bad.
And then I've never had, like, I've been in the ring for, you know, pyro and different stuff like that, but I've been in the ring with Kane when Kane would do the, you know, the pyro, and his flames would go at each corner of the ring, and it's hot. And that's, you know, 8-10 feet away from me. I can imagine being right next to me. It's hot. It's where you can feel that heat. It's like, wow, that's crazy, man.
Yeah, it was nuts, man.
You and I don't know if you remember, I'm sure you remember, but anybody who knows Taker, he can drink more than pretty much any man alive, maybe except for Andre, you know.
And used to be
yeah, exactly. None of us do, but at the time, there was times when younger days that he could drink more than any man. So you and I were in Germany.
In Germany,
and it was the last night of the tour, and we're at the hotel, and it's across the street from the airport.
Mm-hmm.
It's across the street from the airport. So you and I are hanging out, all the boys kind of at the bar, the hotel bar, and you and I are, you know, having a couple of beers. And I was like, I don't know how it happened, but we end up getting a bottle of Jack. One of us bought it.
I don't know how it ever happened. It just happened, man.
So we're doing little half shots. You know, let's just a shot of Jack, you know, and, you know, just a half shot and drinking beers and talking. The boys, you know, the boys are all doing their stuff and having fun. And see, these are the times that I miss. I miss these times with the guys, just, you know, with the boys hanging out.
Yeah.
And you and I just drinking and, you know, shooting the shit and just basically doing what we're doing here and drinking and kind of drinking. Before you know it, that bottle's gone. And I'm like, oh my God. That's at least, you know, half a bottle there. I probably had a fourth of it. and I'm like going, oh my God, that's gone. That was like $800 in Germany, right? For a bottle of that. And, next thing you know, my dad was on the tour. He was my manager at the time. And he puts another bottle in front of us. He bought us another bottle and puts it in front of us. And I'm going, oh my God, we have to fly home in the morning. Our tour is over. We're across the street from the airport. Thank God. The next bottle comes and we continue to do this. I don't remember what happened. I have no clue. You were fine. I just remember waking up. Our flight was like, you know, we had left at 8 a.m. It's a charter flight. We used to have those sport jets with every seat was first class, right?
Right.
So there's no missing that flight, and you miss it. You're on your own.
Yeah, yeah.
You're on your own. I wake up, and I'm like, "What time is it? Oh my God, I'm 30 minutes late from being where we have to be at." I just I don't even know what's going on. I'm so still drunk because it was only probably like 4 hours later, 3 hours later. I throw everything in the baggage. I mean, no brush your teeth, nothing. I just throw everything in. I mean, I don't know how I checked it in. Was running to the plane. I was the last guy on the plane. And as I walk into the plane, I look at you and you're in the first seat. You got your sunglasses on. And you look at me, you're like, "I'm glad you made it." And I'm like, "Fuck you." And I go to what a seat. There's like, you know, one seat left and it's right next to one of the office girls. And I get in the seat, put the seat back. I mean, I didn't brush my teeth. I didn't shower. I just jumped. I had no time. Right. Literally jumped on. And she was probably like, "Are you okay?" Because I slept for 8 straight hours until we landed.
New York, right?
Oh, my God, man. That was a fun time, brother.
Hey, we had a night, too. And you remember that night in Japan?
Oh, yes.
We'll just leave it at that. Yes. We don't need to bring any names up. But that was a fun night.
That was a fun night. You've helped me many times with my my crying and being mad and like,
That was fun. Your shirt and your watch.
My watch. That's right. Right. Are you gonna fight that guy? No. Why is your watch off? Good question.
All right, you got me.
Real quick, I'm gonna do some quick rapid fire questions before we wrap this thing up here, and we're just touching on this. It's basically you guys are getting a little a taste of what it's like for us to have a couple beers and just hang out. And that's usually for 3 or 4 hours with, you know, some beers and some Jack. Yeah. Good times, man.
Times I miss the most.
You know what? Me too, man. I do. I miss those ring times. Don't get me wrong. I miss having this massive, crazy knockdown, awesome fight and match in the ring with a crowd just so hot. That's awesome. But I do miss the boys. I miss hanging out with the boys a lot. All right. So are you a Ford or Chevy guy?
Both, mostly a Ford guy though.
Gotcha. Light beer or full strength?
I have to say light beer. I try to make up for it with the whiskey content.
Right. Bourbon or tequila?
Bourbon.
Are you, we're showing our age in this. So, but are you a Magic or a Bird guy?
Oh man, they coincided together.
I know.
You can't have one without the other. I was a Bird guy.
All right, cool. Chicago Bulls or Detroit Pistons?
Man, it's funny. Initially, I was a Bulls guy.
Right.
Now, I think I look back at Mahorn and what's the other big guy? Mahorn and
McHale?
Celtics. No.
Mahorn and we had
Lambeer.
Sally Lambeer. Oh, Lambeer, that's right.
Sally and Lambeer. Just how physical and how they just tried to beat everybody up.
Right.
I kind of enjoy that now.
Right, now for sure. Are you a blonde or brunette guy?
Blonde.
MMA or boxing?
Ooh, man.
Good one, right?
Set for hours and watch, but you give me a – You give me a Floyd Pacquiao or anything Julio Cesar Chavez ever fought. I love boxing. I think
the sweet science.
Yeah, I've always been a huge boxing guy. Right. But I love MMA too.
Right. Any combat sports, anything in the ring, I'm the same way.
Yeah.
Ali or Tyson?
Oh, these are good, brother.
I know, man. I'm finding it for you.
Oh, man. Ali.
I'm saying. Are you a new cars or a vintage car?
Vintage.
Stallone or Arnold?
I'm gonna go with Stallone just for Rocky alone.
Right. All right.
Just Rocky alone wins it for him.
All right. This is a good one. And for you guys that are younger, just Google these guys. Are you an Earl Campbell guy or Tony Dorsett?
Earl Campbell.
Man, the brawler, right? That guy, the bruiser, he would just run over everybody.
Oh, my gosh. They changed rules because of him. They did away with the tearaway jerseys because of Earl Campbell, man.
Right, right. Summer Olympics or Winter Olympics?
Summer.
So women's beach volleyball or women's gymnastics?
Beach volleyball.
And last one, a wrestling question for wrestlers and wrestling fans. Waffle House guy or Cracker Barrel guy?
Brother, I would say Cracker Barrel's food's better, but I am definitely a Waffle House guy, man.
Right, right. Well, yeah. Cracker House isn't open late, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. I don't think I've ever been in a Waffle House and it wasn't 2 a.m.
Hey, you're not kidding, right? You're not kidding. Hey, man, dude, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I won't take up all your time today. But, you know, it definitely could do a round 2 and a 3 and a 4.
Hey, brother, anytime, man. It's always good catching up.
Right. I miss you, man. I do. I miss hanging out with you. Please give my love to your family. Love them very much.
You do the same. How old are the boys now, man?
20 and, well, it's going to be 21 and 18 next month or so.
Damn, you got old.
I know, right? 21 and 18. One's a junior in college. One's a senior in high school. One's 6'3". Ooh, I don't know where that came from. Yeah, one's 6'3". The oldest is 6'3". Youngest is about, he's about 5'11 right now. He's still growing, so we'll see if he gets to 6'.
Tell him what I said, hey, for sure, man.
I will. You let me know next time you're up here. I know that your beautiful wife was up there saying that you guys might do a trip up here into L.A. or when things calm down. And if they do, you hit me up. I'll show you guys around and show you some good times.
Absolutely, brother.
Love you, brother.
Hey, love you, man. It's been fun.
Thanks for taking time.
Absolutely, dude.
All right, talk to you later.
See you, boy.
All right, bye. Bye. And there you have it. My interview with The Undertaker, a guy that's very mysterious in a lot of ways, and not a lot of people know much about him. But as you can see, he's one of the boys. He's a good old Texas boy like myself. And it was really great just to catch up with my friend. I hope you all enjoyed it as much as I did. And you never know, maybe there'll be a round 2 coming up here in the next couple months. But again, thank you for tuning in to Suplexes and Cervezas with Chavo Guerrero Jr. I hope you all are staying safe during this coronavirus and lockdown. God bless you all, and viva la raza!
Ooh, Chavo!
¿Quieres pedo? Not chale! Ya sabes que a mí me vale! ¿Quieres pedo? Not chale! Cause you know that I'm down for the jale! Knuckle up and boogie, let's get down! Got my back against the wall, so I go the extreme. Watch out, homie, slow your roll before I bounce on your head like a 64. See, good game beats all game. That's why I'm calling out busters and calling out names. Take a shot of Guerrero Tequila. Then I start wrecking shop like Pancho Villa. Sa, stay pa' atrás. Like Roberto Duran, you'll be saying no más. Round the outside, see round the outside. If I don't catch you here, then I'll see you outside. Then I'll Snoop Dogg you and drop you like a